From NPR News, this is News in No Time at Gordon. Recovery efforts continue along the Gulf Coast today as Washington begins to reckon with the growing cost of Hurricane Katrina. President Bush is asking for $40 billion in initial aid. Senate Democratic leader Harry Reid said the final bill could reach more than $150 billion. As concern over the toxic waters and the health of those who remain in New Orleans continues to mount, yesterday, New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin ordered police and rescue teams to use force when necessary to remove the estimated 10,000 residents that remain in the city. I spoke with New Orleans Police Chief Edwin Compass via cell phone while he was on patrol. The chief says harsh criticism of his force is unwarranted and that he's proud of how his team responded to the crisis.
This is a police department undermanned, under-equipped, understaffed that held this city together with the help of local law enforcement agencies throughout the state of Louisiana and kept the city intact for 6 days without food, without water, without ammunition, without supplies, without bathroom facilities. We were defecating and urinating in the street. We were sleeping in cars. We're working 21 hours in a row. We had a Superdome that we had to man with 30,000 people, and we had drug dealers in there. We had criminals in there, and we held that. We had a convention center with 30,000 people, but the only thing different than the convention center and the Superdome, the people in the Superdome were searched for weapons. Soon as the convention center just migrated, and it caused a problem and catastrophe like never known. You got small members of the criminal element that we fight every day as police officers preying upon innocent victims, children, old ladies, the weak. They weren't given food or water for 4 days. And my SWAT teams had to make 30 entries in there. And as they were shooting at us, we couldn't shoot back because they had too many innocent people. So what my officers would do, they would surround the flash and start immediately searching everybody by the flash. And upon feeling the gun, they would yell gun, and then they would all go towards that sign and extract the individuals out of there. I mean, there's so many stories. Captain Timmy Bayard led the rescue crew with our own boats, police boats. We took thousands and thousands of people out of the water with the rescue mission, which is still going on today. You know, this police department fought heroically, fought valiantly against all odds. They were wondering where the mayor was at. Why wasn't he having press conferences? The mayor was out here on the front line, walking the streets, walking in the Superdome among the feces and urine and criminals, walking in the convention center trying to encourage the people. I was briefing the mayor every day. We were fighting for our lives. We were fighting for the citizens of this city. We were fighting for the hearts of this city. And what we were able to do is really what you call miraculous.
Chief, I have very close friends who are in police departments across the country. I have relatives who are police officers in Detroit. And they talked to me about what they thought you must be facing. And, Chief, I can't use any other word than this. I don't want to sound inarticulate. But I can hear that you're pissed off, quite frankly, with the criticism that you have heard coming from outsiders. Fair?
That's about fair. You know, and it's like, you know, people are judging. You know, no one was here, you know, to know what really happened. The people that were here, they're praising this police department. They want to talk about a small percentage of our police that deserted. What about the 1,200 that stayed strong, that risked their lives every day? That's the stories I want to tell. I don't want to talk about a few cows that didn't have the heart and intestinal fortitude to stand with us. I want to talk about my commanders. You know, we had no radio communications. My deputy chief and my commanders ran this operation from the streets. We were getting shot at with our troops. We were going without food like our troops. We were living with our troops because that's what held us together. And with all the gun battles that we had, with all the negativity we had, we did not lose one police officer. And that's a testament to the will, the power, and the training this New Orleans Police Department.
Let me talk to you about where the New Orleans Police Department stands right now. You've got a whole lot of help now. You've got the military down, but sometimes that becomes a territorial fight between agencies. Are you comfortable not only with where you sit, but where the city sits?
I'm very comfortable with the city, just to a certain extent that I think we have everything stabilized. We still have a long way to go. We still have to get some equipment in here. We still have to get some type of order as it relates to the way the supplies are coming in, which we're already doing. We've established a prison. We've established a very basic reporting system that we just put in place. We're doing regular routine patrols. We have people with fixed posts, fixed assignments. The National Guard has now taken a large of the patrol responsibility with my police department. I'm able to arrest some of my police officers right now. So we've made some great strides as it relates to getting back to being a police department.
What about that criminal element that you talked about, albeit very small? How controlled and contained do you have it now?
Well, darkness is their ally, and us is our enemy. Once we get this electricity going, it's going to be a lot easier to patrol these neighborhoods. As a matter of fact, I'm on patrol right now. That's why you might hear the sound of that. Everybody's working a patrol shift. We are going to keep this city safe. We are going to take this city back. We're making numerous arrests as we speak. But we have to get these citizens to understand they have to evacuate. In order to start the building process, we have to get the innocent citizens out of harm's way. So when we go after the criminals, they don't get caught in a crossfire accident.
We keep hearing the numbers of expected dead to be found. Talk to me about what your expectations are and how the last couple of days have been.
I expect the death toll to be in the thousands. There are many, many houses that we have to check that have people who couldn't get out. You have a lot of old people in these houses. It's going to be probably one of the worst disasters in the history of this country, if not the worst disaster in the history of this country, after it's all said and done, as a result of death toll, as well as property devastation.
The African-American community has been concerned in terms of the response down to that city, in terms of what was given not only militarily, but whether or not people's lives were looked upon as valuable. Do you believe that this country needs to take another look at how we dealt with this situation from a racial and economic standpoint?
I think so, but you know, I pride myself on being a police officer and a soldier. Even though I'm a chief, I'm still a soldier at heart. And that's for the bureaucrats to discuss. My job is to protect human life, save human life, and keep the men and women under my command safe.
Chief, the FEMA head, Michael Brown, suggested that what you were facing there was tantamount to urban warfare, particularly the first few days. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would agree with that, and it was like an urban warfare we never thought. We had the event tactics to deal with it. That's what I'm so proud of my office. I mean, imagine, no one ever thought of a scenario of having women and children and pregnant ladies and old people in the same place where the criminal element is at, and they're armed and firing.
We talk about this 1-2% who have been doing the wrong thing, but I also understand that there are civilian men who stepped up to the plate as well.
Oh, there were many civilian men that stepped up to the plate. One example, a mayor was sharing with me, where they had some men, because what they did when the hotels left, they let the guests go. They had some individuals from out of town. I think they're from Germany. They didn't speak English. They were very vulnerable. And they had some brothers from the hood that was hard hitters that said, look, we're going to protect y'all tonight. And they formed a circle around that family, and they didn't allow anything to happen to that family because some of the gangs were sizing them up, and they stood there and protected that family. See, that's the type of story that you get out there. They had another brother who had made a cooking barbecue, and he was feeding children and women. You know, these are brothers that stood up, but they don't want to talk about that. They just want to talk about the ones that are doing the criminal act.
Chief, let me ask you something about the continuing evacuation. I know that there are people still who are saying they just don't want to leave. It is a deplorable situation down there. What are you doing about those people?
Well, you know, we're trying to encourage them to leave, and it's going to get to the point where we're going to have to bring them with or without their will because it's getting a dangerous situation. We have hires. We have fires that's being set. They have no way that they can get out of these houses in time. It's very, very difficult and very, very dangerous. In order to clean this city up and get these criminals out of here, we got to get the civilians out of here. So they're going to have to understand that there's a mandatory evacuation. It's not a situation where they have a choice.
Chief, are you concerned at all about the depletion of your police force beyond the next few weeks? I mean, obviously, for New Orleans, this is going to go on for years and years.
Let me tell you, the law enforcement officers throughout the country have called me and offered support and help. I think we're going to be in good shape. Hal Hurt, president of Major City Chiefs, called me, and he's going to organize Major City Chiefs. We're going to be funneling police officers on a rotating basis until, you know, we can get to the point where we become self-sufficient again. I mean, the response that we've gotten throughout the nation is incredible. We have people from Hawaii that came to help. So my brothers in law enforcement throughout the nation, I want to thank you and let you know I love you.
Let me ask you this as relates to one of the things that we've been hearing about, and I want to get your take on this, and that is the plan that was in place prior to the hurricane hitting. There have been questions about how prepared the city was to deal with those who could not evacuate on their own. How, at the end of the day, satisfied are you that the plan was correct?
First of all, the mayor of our city did the greatest job of any mayor in the history of this country. He put a mandatory evacuation in place. We sent police officers to residences and rang doorbells. bullhorns. He encouraged people to wake their neighbors up and get them out. If someone doesn't want to leave, it's very difficult to know who's inside and who's not. You know, many people can Monday morning quarterback, but at the end of the day, I think my man can look in the mirror and say, job well done.
And what of those who couldn't move, who weren't mobile? What was the plan for that? And was it too massive for the city to take on alone?
Well, it was a massive problem. You know, when you look at something from this of this magnitude, you need a lot of help. You know, and when you don't get that help for something of this magnitude, it's very difficult for a city to do that alone.
Soon the adrenaline will have to come down. How are you going to be able to face what you're going to have to deal with psychologically? Because that would affect the best of us.
Well, see, that's when you're talking about what kind of mayor we have. He's already set up psychological counseling and medical treatment for all city employees who were involved in this disaster.
Chief, let me ask you personally how you've been dealing with it. We know that you've had two suicides already. We don't know what caused them or whether there were issues before all of this occurred with those two men. But you have a wife who's 8 months pregnant, a three-year-old daughter. Talk to me about how you and your family have been dealing with this.
Well, you know, Bishop Paul Martin, Charles Southall, Dal Brister, Father Michael Jobs, these are spiritual men of God who I deal with on the police department on a daily basis. They've been calling me, keeping me encouraged, keeping me filled. I'm a Christian, and I give God all the glory. And they have been keeping my family safe. They've kept me covered. I've been shot at and tried to kidnap me, but no harm has come to me because the men of God have protected me. And that's why I'm so, my spiritual self, everybody wonder why I have so much energy. God has given me this energy. People want to know why I'm not afraid, because God has told me I cannot be afraid of things if he's going to protect me. And if you are a true believer, then you have to believe that, and I really do.
All right. Well, Chief Compass, we want to salute you, man, for the job you're doing down there. And we're going to get down there when things quiet down a bit for you. And I'd love to walk with you and show people that you're on the rebound.
I'm looking forward to that, man. You have a blessed day.
All right, Chief. Thank you.
All right.
That was New Orleans Police Chief Edwin Compass.